Innovation Rockstars. Innovation Rockstars.
Today with Thomas Bormans, head of foresight at E.ON and passionate energy transition manager.
In his role at E.ON, Thomas develops foresight based on trend and technology developments and provides strategic guidance to capture future opportunities and risks. In this episode, Thomas takes us on his mission to think, plan, and implement the energy transition at scale. We learn more about impactful trends in energy and whether we are on the cusp of the next energy revolution. He also points out why E.ON, as one of the world's largest private energy service providers, needs foresight and how it is changing the way the company invests in growth opportunities. Also, if you want to know what Thomas's secret tip is for making foresight a real game changer in companies, stay tuned for the next 30 minutes.
Now on Innovation Rockstars.
Hi, and welcome back to the Innovation Rockstar interviews. My name is Chris Müroth, and in this episode, I am thrilled to welcome Thomas Bormans from E.ON. Thomas is an energy transition expert and manager with exceptional insights and network among manufacturers, energy companies, consultancies, associations, NGOs, and governments in Europe. And his passion is think, plan, and implement the energy transition at scale. Now, I would say this is spot on and an incredibly important topic in these times. So, Thomas, thanks a lot for being my guest on this episode.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation, Chris. Looking forward.
All right. So we will kick things off with a 60 seconds introduction sprint about you, your career, and your role at E.ON. So for the next kind of 60 seconds, the stage is yours. Let's go.
So, yeah, I am Thomas Bormans. I'm 5 years with E.ON now. At E.ON, I'm heading the foresight activities within corporate strategy. And before doing so, I was 16 years in consultancy around energy efficiency, renewable energy, climate policies. And I did so for associations, companies, national governments, and the European Commission. And in my private life, I have a family and I'm trying to play football as often as I can.
All right, that was spot on. Thanks. Okay, so now next, here are three sentence starters for you. And I would like to ask you to complete them. Let's start with them. So number one, to me, foresight is
the effort to build a bridge into the future that we can walk over.
Great answer. Okay, number two, I believe in what we do at E.ON because...
Yeah, I think at E.ON, we're working at the heart, really, of the energy transition, which is an endeavor which is as pressing as meaningful. So, yeah, I think we're spot on and in the right corner there.
Definitely. Thanks. And lastly, number three, we can dramatically speed up the global energy transition if...
I think if we consistently combine our view on the future, where we need to head to, and step by step building the activities there. And in the end, not leaving out a single of the things that we need to do in the middle and just believe we would get somewhere.
Yes. So all for consistency. I like that. Perfect. True words. Okay. Now, Thomas, I'm pretty sure you are familiar with Kondratiev waves, right? Which is a concept proposed by and named after the Soviet economist Nikolai Kondratiev, someone in the 1920s, actually. And the Kondratiev essentially described three phases for each of, the Kondratiev's waves, expansion, stagnation, and recession. And according to this concept, each wave includes, a technological revolution, such as the steam engine, railroads and steel, electrification, automobiles, and information technology. And each wave, is said to last somewhat between 45 and 60 years. So here's my question to you. The question is, in your opinion, are we at the beginning of such a new wave? And if so, will an energy revolution possibly be that new super cycle wave?
Yeah, I would say definitely we can call it one of these waves. I would only say we're not at the beginning. Actually, when I started working on the energy transition, that was in the year 2000, then it was really about pilot projects, demos. Now, since a few years, it's only around scale. So ramp up massively, get the impact done. And then in the end, in 2050, we all together hopefully have done it right. But it could indeed be such a cycle over such a long period. And by the way, there's also a term called CapEx supercycle, so capital expenditure supercycle, which the energy transition is connected to, because there is the anticipation that we need massive investments over a longer period in the infrastructure of energy for the energy transition. And just to show the complexity, that's not the only thing we need to do. There's infrastructure like roads, there is telecom, there's water. So there's even much more than energy, which is already a big challenge. And altogether, that doesn't make things easier, I would say.
It does definitely not make things easier. And, you know, talking about the future, what are some of the, you know, current and most impactful trends, let's say, in energy, right? So, and apart from the typical ones, such as, you know, renewable energy, which, by the way, personal opinion is actually a misleading term, because you cannot physically renew energy, right? But anyways, what are kind of the, you know, current and most impactful trends you see?
Well, in the energy, I would say it's, on the one hand side, it's sustainability. This sounds like a no-brainer, but it's not only renewable energy, but it's all the concept of sustainability, including the value chains and things like that. And this is something that drives the customers, really. It's, for example, about using heat from industry for cities. Secondly, we think that convenience is a super big topic. It's the convenience of using energy services, not only for private clients, but also for companies to perfectly fit in their business environment. And that's, for example, when it's about digital assistants that help you to buy and use energy service. And certainly it's about the resilience. We've seen now many occasions where the resilience of systems seems to be not a given anymore. And if we think of the energy infrastructure, it needs to be resilient against hacker attacks, against pandemics, against storms and the like. And this is a value which comes very clearly these days. And altogether, these three trends will lead to certain products and services that we will believe will help to address these trends.
That's true. And now let's, you know, turn to E.ON and maybe sort a couple of things first, right? So with E.ON being one of the major public utility companies in Europe and the world's largest investor-owned energy service provider, I think the majority of the audience may still think that E.ON's business is mainly around electricity from, you know, classical nuclear power plants. Is that actually still true?
No, it's not. I mean, we are indeed winding down the nuclear activities according to Germany's exit plan on that. But the real focus of our company are actually two pillars. It's on the one hand side, the so-called energy networks business. You could call the backbone of the energy system with the electricity and gas grids. And the other is the, as we call it, customer solutions, which is like our sales activity on electricity and gas. But it's also activities like charging for electric mobility. It's heat networks for cities and buildings. It's things like heat recovery use in energy industry or efficiency projects. So it's a wider range of things, and by no means the old world that some might know.
So to me, that personally, you know, it sounds like E.ON now already knows what's important in the future. So let me ask a somewhat provocative question. So why does E.ON then actually need, you know, foresight or foresight capabilities?
Yeah, a good question. Once you think that all of these focus is already there, but actually, while the main route is already clear, there are still so many answers open. Well, even if we form the backbone of the energy transition and if we work at the intersection to our customers in these energy services, which kind of services will grow, which ones maybe also be not that much into demand? What are possible disruptive developments that could occur? Which is the stuff we should actually put our bugs on in contrast to maybe doing everything just a little? And on these questions, and forward-looking mode, the company does not only want an analysis, a one-off analysis, but a constant picture that evolves over time and gives the understanding. And yeah, that's what we're here for.
So this, you know, this sounds like there is certainly a large chunk of continuity to that, right? So let's dig a bit deeper into the foresight journey at E.ON. Can you tell me, you know, kind of when did it all start?
Well, in terms of timing, it started actually around 4 years ago that we started with these activities really at E.ON. It's not that the first time someone was thinking around the future of energy. I mean, that was done all the time. But that was the moment where kind of a clear approach on this was in question and was set up. And that's when we started to structurally work on something like that.
Okay. And, you know, how did you get started? So what were kind of the first steps, the first capabilities that you actually brought to the company?
I would say it's on the one hand side, for me, a solid expertise on the energy transition that I could bring in when I started on this position. The other thing is, a strong customer orientation. And I learned that a lot in consultancy, that we really focus on the customer. In this case, it's the internal customer. And the third thing, which I probably brought with me, is that I was already for 1 year within E.ON, so knowing a little bit the company and a few of the ins and outs.
Yeah, which gives you a great head start, I guess. Now, you know, Thomas, some guests at the Innovation Rockstars show told me that, you know, when they started out with not only with foresight, but actually with a structured approach and setting up all the processes and organizational units behind that, they told me often they started with some kind of a rogue unit. And they also, you know, they had to convince a lot of people that this is actually the right thing to do. Was it the same in your situation? Or did you already, you know, kind of get a kickstart and get enough resources from the beginning on?
Yeah, on my side, it indeed was maybe different than I heard from indeed various colleagues in that area. In our way, it was already the function was created and they looked for someone who would set up a small team and the approach to do foresighting at E.ON, and I got the job. So, but then the challenge was to kind of prove that we can really add value. So it wasn't without challenges, even if there was a head start on that was.
So sure. Can you talk about some of these challenges that you actually had to overcome? How did you go?
Yeah, I would say challenges, there were quite a few because we actually started the activities from scratch and there's much more than you need to do than fill this position on paper. I mean, maybe you have even a card or so, but if it says, yeah, head of foresight or something like that, it doesn't mean that you are. The point is that you need to fill that with life in daily life with the work together with the colleagues. The other thing is that we also ran into some troubles or things that just didn't work. For example, in the beginning, we thought, okay, if we look at the future, maybe our job is then to put forward ideas to the innovation team and what they could work on. Sounds pretty logical if you look at the future of energy. But then ideas is what innovation teams have themselves. So there wasn't a lot of, things to gain on that element. Then, of course, because we look at our customers, we said, that didn't work. So probably we need to cooperate or in joint deep dives get on the way. But if we did that, we recognized we were kind of drawn into the work of the innovation teams. And in the end, we couldn't really add much of a different angle because we kind of were drawn into the project. So what we finally did then after some discussions was that we found out that they were rather interested in checking their ideas against the company strategy and against the view of the future of the company. Because if they, with their ideas, hit these areas and can make a clear connection, then they get tailwind in the organization to get successful. And that's super meaningful, but it's a more strategic approach to foresight. And that's what we then turn to.
Got it. So the innovation teams do not want you to be the ideators and the ones telling them what to do, basically. So that's an interesting perspective. So let's you know, dig a bit deeper into that and also what foresight looks like at E.ON today. So let's get into some of the, you know, nitty-gritty details. For example, you know, how do you decide what to look at and what not to look at? You know, this is the discussion between you know, scanning too wide for, you know, outside in information or not scanning too narrow. So how do you kind of, you know, find this perfect spot?
Good question and important question, because obviously I think if you Google for energy, you get billions of hits, let's say. So no way reading through all of these. On the other hand, the company relies on us to do an early warning to find new fields. So in that squeeze, what are we doing? And what we decided for is to go actually first quite broad. We look into many, let's say, press, social media, the typical energy newsletters, academia, what have you. We also use energy or information platforms around venture capital and the like. And all of this we do to kind of form a bigger basis, but let's say with a more rough view. And then we do a decision on, okay, what is then, what has a relation to E.ON and our business? And you could say, well, this would narrow down the funnel already a lot, and it does. But it's also important to know that E.ON, for example, has glass fiber business for data, or actually water business. So there's a lot we still look at. And what we then narrow down the stuff is the things that we assume can be really impactful. So not changing a bit the EBIT in sub-business XYZ, but what could really turn around the energy transition, make it move, make it hamper it, accelerate it, what have you.
So it's about the, you know, the bigger and the medium and long term questions. I get that. But how do you form your opinion? How do you reach consensus, actually?
Yeah, let's split that in half. So how we form our opinion is that we look a lot into the why. So sometimes people ask me, so Thomas, what is happening in the future? And I say, whoops, nothing's just happening. It's people who do it. It's you and me. It's other people who take decisions, start or stop things. So when forming an opinion about a development in the transition, we actually want to understand the why. So who is doing what, with whom, or avoiding someone else, or securing a certain position. So there are a lot of things that play a role underneath. And they are just important to first acknowledge these facts, not already judging or so, but just understanding why people do things. And that is a lot how we form an opinion, because I think stuff will happen that will benefit quite some people that also have the power and possibility to do something. So that is also important stuff we need to look at. And on the consensus part, we're discussing a lot, actually. We discuss in the team. We discuss with other teams in E.ON. There's the regulatory team. There are other people who look into strategies of certain parts of the company, the innovation teams, people in R&D. So we do that. Then finally, we have a, we call it foresight circle within the company, with whom we discuss dedicatedly our, yeah, the updates of the trend radar and stuff like that. And then finally, we have the board and supervisory board with whom we discuss the stuff that we present. And all of that leads, let's say, in the end to an opinion that has a broader basis than just, let's say, some fancy ideas we did on an afternoon.
Right. And maybe addressing the foresight circles real quick. So who's kind of part, who actually has a chair in the foresight circle?
That's indeed, for example, the people from the R&D people from Energy Networks. It's people and teams from the digital side in E.ON who work on digital projects. It's also what we call R&T, research and technology, that look into technology developments. That is kind of the core team we're having there. And then I set their wider teams around that, with which we are also in regular contact, but not, let's say, in this core group.
Okay, got it. Now, let's focus even more. So, you know, now you've reached consensus. And how do you move on from there? How to, you know, generate real insights for E.ON or for the company for the future, maybe derived from those trends?
I think here it's, again, the point is that we need the understanding. So without the understanding, it's just information. This and that happened, or this is about to happen, or some people have an argumentation or a line that something will develop in that way. But with the understanding of the underlying stuff, we can move it a bit more into insights and explain which fields are maybe specifically interesting, also because certain people are really pushing on it, and maybe even people which have a lot of possibilities, which can be money, influence, political force, whatever. And then very practical, let's say, the insights leads to stuff like when we talk to our guys on Future Energy Ventures, that's the venture capital arm of E.ON. And that is where we concretely then have insights like which are strategic search fields they could look for new startups, or what are areas or companies they could also consider an exit under current conditions. So that's the kind of insights we're moving to, by, let's say, helping the understanding of the issue and who's involved.
Okay, got it. And then, you know, finally, you got all this information, insights, maybe also quantitative data, if possible, and maybe also opportunities derived from that. Now, how to bring this to life, to practice? How do you move from insights to real impact then?
Yeah, I would say the impact comes when you have the insights. That's only when you can even think about the impact. But once you have the insights, you need certain formats, or I call it anchor products, with which you can generate the impact. So one of our anchor products is the trend radar that we're having, or the beliefs on the energy transition that I just mentioned before, the sustainability, convenience, and the resilience factors. But it's also certain formats, like we have certain workshop formats to get the information and get into a discussion. Because if you only kind of write reports and drop them somewhere, even if it's the intranet, it won't work. Just won't work.
And as you mentioned, right, there are some recurring formats. For example, for the E.ON Supervisory Board, you just mentioned that a couple of minutes ago. Can you maybe tell us a bit more about these formats? You know, what is discussed and decided there? What is kind of the outcome?
Yeah, on the meetings with the supervisory board, we develop a report. It's a condensed thing. It's below 10 pages, very compact, but kind of stuffed with information. And then we present and discuss. Last time, indeed, it was then virtually, but normally it's live. And in the report, we have these anchor products that I mentioned. So the updated trend radar, the beliefs on the energy transition, what really drives our customers. But we also add a kind of, we call it 360-degree view on the surrounding world. So what is else happening in energy? What are markets doing? What are competitors doing? And that's where we kind of embed the stuff. And all of this comes then in a discussion. And the outcome, I would say, is it's actually opinions. Now, in such a board meeting, no one jumps up and says, hey, that's cool, let's do this tomorrow or so. But that's not because it's the board, they're quite nice, but it's also, or the supervisory board, also you and me, we don't, let's say, if we change an opinion, we're not jumping up and shouting, hey. It's more like you're working a bit with it, you're chewing on it, and then maybe you think there's something in it. And actually, these kind of changes in opinion, that's what I'm striving for myself in our work, because if we all always have the same opinion, it will for sure, let's say, be old-fashioned and actually wrong after some time, even if it was right in the beginning. And let's say this is kind of understanding and changing opinion that's actually quite powerful, because it decides what people do on the long term, maybe for a longer time. And but we're also measuring that, because we are also asking all the time how happy were you with the presentation and the insights, because we want to have that feedback and not just rely that, yeah, maybe they pick something up or change maybe an opinion, but make that more explicit how happy they are.
So I think that's actually a great way and a great opportunity to bring the, you know, the trend radar to the board or to the supervisory board, actually. And, you know, you've also said that there is, you know, some other portfolio elements or, you know, formats that you do with Aeon Innovation, with the innovation team. So same here, what is the purpose of these workshops for with the innovation team and what happens there? What impact do they have? Can you also give us some insights on this format?
What we did there is we actually looked at the, not a single topic or so, but we looked at all the companies in Future Energy Ventures portfolio. So it's a bit more than 60. And we compared these to then the Foresight view on the energy transition, the company strategy. And we kind of made this check to see where do these companies directly add to topics that we see on the trend radar, or where does these topics match with the main drivers we see in the energy transition? How is the interaction with the company strategy? And actually, this is then kind of typical, you could say, strategy work, where you end up with showing portfolios where you might be in this corner to the left, but the upper right is a bit not so much happening. So you consider to move there or maybe move out of other areas. And that's concrete recommendations we can develop from there.
All right. Yeah, I think I got it now. You know, let's do the real talk here. What's your twist? What is your secret sauce? I mean, this sounds really successful and also already established to such a large corporation at Aeon. So what are you doing differently than anyone else in Foresight?
Well, of course, I'm now explaining what's happening, but actually, yeah, indeed, we're happy that things are moving, but of course, it's also not without difficulties. I would say, yeah, I don't know whether it's unique to what we do, but I hear from many other colleagues that work in similar or same positions in other companies that they rather work either with innovation teams and businesses or more the board level. And we're always striving to do both and not just to be heard everywhere or so. That's, of course, nice, but it has a very, very practical reason. The point is the strategy teams, before picking up recommendations or considering these things we're discussing and presenting, they want to know, does the board see it similar? Do we have buy-in from this side? And if we have, that makes things much more powerful, of course, and a more stable ground. On the other hand, the board, again, wants to know, have you discussed this with the guys from the business? Have you talked to innovation? Because they also want to know whether this is really well, let's say, founded, the good foundation in the company. So that's why I think these two sides are actually important.
So you're actually embracing, you know, the duality here and manage, you know, expectations on all those different levels, which I think is a very smart move. And, you know, if we would talk about impact for a moment, you know, all the Foresight activities and also Foresight capabilities, how did they actually change the way Aeon invests into future opportunities today?
Yeah, I think there are two answers to this. When the question is, how do things change? On the one hand side, I think we brought in a new structural element in how we deal with the future with these Foresight capabilities, and especially our work to not only do Foresight, but to consistently link this story from Foresight, innovation, corporate strategy, business, to make that a logical chain. And by the way, when you said, yeah, it sounds quite successful, yeah, luckily we are until now with the stuff it is acknowledged, but we're not yet there that all of this is structurally completely embedded. So we're trying to do, let's say, more of these workshops with other teams and the like. But that's something that we want to do. And that's also something which changes then over time the way you address opportunities, not so much stuff looking. I mean, we didn't just grab things that were flying by, but now we have even more structural approach to do that. The other thing is that topic-wise, we indeed do at Aeon quite some things that we looked at in Foresight. For example, Aeon formed a cross-domain team to work on energy for cities. That wasn't the case in the beginning. It was more combining different skills. Now there's a dedicated team. That's something we looked into earlier. There's a lot of actions, of course, around hydrogen, something which everybody knows today, but something which we looked since quite some time. And also, for example, there's a new way of looking at urban city centers. And because we now gradually see, and that was already visible a bit earlier, that people might move also again more out of the cities in more the suburb areas. And that's actually now seen as something important for our regional businesses, which are exactly there more around these cities or in smaller cities and not so much the city centers.
Okay, so thanks for the exciting insights into the, I would say, the state of the art, right, of foresight at E.ON. And you had a good point there. Let's maybe quickly talk about the future of foresight at E.ON. So can you, you know, what's next? What do you want to achieve in the future?
We're never done, let's say. As a matter of things, we want to continue to watch how things are developing. And I mean, as we speak, there are thousands of reports coming out. There's new initiatives that are being built. But let's say keeping the momentum and spinning the wheel is one thing. The other thing is that very practically, we would like to do more of these portfolio or strategic portfolio analysis for innovation teams or business teams, looking at the kind of projects they're doing in that way. So I think that's something that can add value. And we also want to strengthen our foresight network so that we can link to more experts with whom we can exchange how to do foresight, how to develop it, not to stand still. And actually, yeah, this talk and this nice format is somehow part of building that network.
It can be, for sure. Okay, now, you know, let's imagine the following scenario. You know, that there might be, you know, someone in the network or in the audience who is right in the process of building foresight capabilities in large organizations, for example. So, you know, what would be your advice? What maybe three key takeaways would you give to someone like this?
Actually, yeah, the one thing is to work to addressing, as I said, both the innovation teams and strategy and the board level to have these both sides. I think that is a crucial part of success. The other thing is really to have this customer focus and to always strive to such win-win situations where the foresight activities and whatever the other team or person does, that you get into a win-win. And not just sometimes or so, but really dedicated all the time. And that's the difference. And the third thing, we haven't touched on this yet, is to have a compact team, but really also with diverse capabilities. Not a bunch of people which are thinking all alike, but more like people who have different views.
All right. Just a quick question on number two, with focusing on customer. Do you mean internal customer, external customer, or both?
I mean, actually, the internal customer, I would say to 90%. But actually, there's also an external customer where we talk with partners on what could be possible. And same holds for these.
Yeah, got it. All right. Thanks for the clarification. Now, before we close the episode, I, you know, would hear from you about our signature question. Looking back at your career at E.ON so far, what would you say was your greatest innovation rock star moment so far?
Yeah, actually, I would say there are two. One, I can remember when we first presented our approach on foresighting and first activities to the E.ON board. It started actually a bit complicated. So we came in and then it was said, hey, yeah, and hi guys. But we were thinking of skipping the topic from the agenda. So we kept it on. But please convince us that this is an important topic we should listen to. And then I stood there and thought, oh, you better perform now. Then also, let's say, after some minutes, they said, okay, and what is your background again? And what is the background of the team? And I explained a bit. And actually, these questions were quite okay because they wanted to know, why are we doing that? What's the aim? Is it convincing? And secondly, who is doing it? And then the feedback we got in the end was very positive. But so that was kind of a rock star moment on stage to, whew, we've made that one. And the other one, actually, that was quite hidden, or maybe only visible for me without stages. It was when we've done the workshop with Future Energy Ventures to assess their startups, that somewhere in the middle of the workshop, I thought by myself, hey, Thomas, I think this is working. So that was really good.
So two rockstar moments, one on stage and one off stage. Both are great. Congratulations to those moments. And with that, we have reached the end of this episode. So Thomas, I would like to thank you very much for sharing your insights. It was exciting and inspiring at the same time to listen to you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And to everybody listening or watching, if you want to learn more about this topic, simply leave us a comment on this episode or just drop us an email at info@innovation-rockstars.show. Now that's it. Thanks for listening and see you in the next episode. Take care and bye-bye.
Innovation Rockstars.
This was Thomas Bormans about working at the intersection of energy transition and foresight at E.ON. If you want to dive deeper into the topic of strategic foresight or the future of energy, or if you'd simply like to give us feedback on this episode, just email us at info@innovationrockstars.show. For more inspiring innovation stories, visit our website at www.innovationrockstars.show or browse through our Innovation Rockstars channel on all major podcast platforms.